Next up, we're going to talk to Dominic all about things technical, including the new iPhone, which we've got some information on. We'll talk to that. We'll play some Aretha Franklin just for a couple of minutes to come back and talk about the new iPhone, the good, the bad, and the ugly. There is Aretha Franklin and Dr. Feelgood. This is Future Radio. I'm Tim McWilliam. Community Chest for a Monday. And we've been had a bit of a theme through today's show, Dominic, which has been different times you'd like to have lived in. If you don't like 2007, if you don't like things that are going on that are a bit too politically correct, things like Christmas, if some had their way, would not be called Christmas, it would be called Winterville.
I like that very much. I would actually prefer Christmas to be called Winterville.
Why?
Well, I'm you know, I mean, it's given that my hobbies range into sort of new and upcoming and cutting edge, I like change. I like shaking things up and, so seeing different things. And
should we call Easter Springball?
Well, why not? I mean, it's not like Christmas is that ancient tradition. I mean, it's basically a newly manufactured holiday anyway, and the same for, you know, same for Easter. Except, you know, there just always happened to be some sort of festival in those times. So might as well call it Winterville if you want.
I thought it was 2007 years old.
I don't. Yeah, right. That's the same thing as, you know, Thanksgiving people in the U.S. people thinking that it goes all the way back to the Pilgrims. Whereas, in fact, it was invented in the 1870s as kind of a patriotic holiday. So
it sounds like you and I should have a big discussion on this on air sometime in the future. But so another time you'd like to have lived in, if not in 2007.
Well, you know what? I'm very happy. I have actually, as I was telling you off air, is that I've actually been asked to write about that for a festival of sort of new documentaries back in the Czech Republic, and I've written quite extensively about that. That it's very tempting to look at these times because we only have these snapshots of it, and it looks all sort of a, you know, sort of a gilded age,
yeah,
and everything.
It does, for
but
sure.
In fact, it's all, you know, but that's okay if you're sort of white upper class male, but pretty much for, you know, so I would be okay, even though, you know, I'm sort of, you know, I'm nowhere near upper class, but, you know, so basically, I, you know, by and large, I'd be all right at any age. However, the problem is that if you're any sort of diverge from the standard, then you would have a, you know, you certainly wouldn't have had a very happy time. So, you know, so I don't have, as an age, I don't really have an age that I'd like to live in. However, I would have liked to experience certain environments and certain ages. Like, for instance, like I would have really, really liked this sort of Russia from 1910 to 1930, about thereabouts, particularly the sort of the Moscow and the St. Petersburg and, well, Leningrad later on, poet scenes, you know, where the poets like Mayakovsky were on stage and reciting their poetry. It was very sort of a very I don't know, it's kind of a burbling environment. The same thing for Prague in the 30s. So I would have liked to experience those environments, but I'm not saying they're better. There were better times. I just said, you know, it would have been interesting to just kind of look around and see how things were. And he would have found that people will have, you know, been moaning about that age as well.
Yeah, I think that there wouldn't be too much techie stuff for you to
discuss.
And that
is true. I mean,
course.
I wouldn't have... I cannot imagine my life without computer, because I do a lot of writing, and I literally cannot imagine not being able to edit my text really quickly. And
I think the thing I want easily. You to invent, what I want you to invent, is a time machine.
Yes,
and then we can all go off to different times.
Well, I think we'll leave that to Steve Jobs, you know, and his reality distortion field.
So, what do you make then of the iPhone?
It's the biggest hoax of this year. It's off. It's absolutely overpriced, underfeatured, overhyped. I cannot say enough negative things about it. It looks beautiful, as all Apple designs do. It's missing certain features, and it is outrageously expensive.
Mm.
Steve Jobs announced it last year in January at Macworld Expo, whatever it's called these days, and then people just basically started raving about it without seeing it for 6 months. It was a huge hype. In the U.S., it was one of the biggest consumer electronics launches ever. They sold 1 million handsets since the end of June. However, it cost $600 on release in the U.S. They had to discount it to $400. However, that is including a two-year contract. And that is the same. It was just released on Friday with O2, and you have to pay £370 for it, and lock yourself in with O2 for 2 years at a contract that is a minimum £35. And that, I think, is outrageous. My recommendation is, do not buy it unless you're very rich and, you know, you can throw your money away. Do yourself a favor, get one of those free, if you don't mind a contract, get one of those phones that come free with a contract or cheap with a contract. It's just, I think it's a huge ripoff. It has some nice features. There's no doubt. It has, you know, it says the touch interface so that you can sort of zoom into pictures with just, you know, with just your thumb and your forefinger and gesturing on it. However, it's missing. It doesn't synchronize notes properly. It's missing a task list. You cannot put your own applications on it, which I think is completely ridiculous. And it's just a typical, you know, I mean, and the other thing you should remember, that Apple is actually getting a deal. This is the genius of Steve Jobs, is that he was able to make deals with phone companies that they're actually paying him for every handset sold, and supposedly paying him a cut of your monthly fees. So
he's a clever man.
He's absolutely a clever man, but please show, you know, do yourself a favor, be cleverer than him and don't buy this thing. It's going to go down in price soon. It's going to get better in the next version, and there's already alternatives that do almost as much, and some of them do it better.
I guess it's a first generation, isn't it, as well? So maybe the first generations don't always do as you want them to. You have to wait for some of the glitches and problems and worms and things
to
get removed.
Yes, but it's been sort of advertised as the second coming, and it isn't the second coming. The only use case, if you have a lot of money to throw away and you have an iPod and lots of iTunes tracks and you don't want to carry a phone and an iPod separately, then they might do the job for you. But if you're looking for a phone for business, it isn't ideal for business. If you're looking for sort of a good media phone, well, it's pretty good for that. You can watch videos on it, listen to music. However, it is so ridiculously overpriced.
There's an iPod Touch, but that hasn't got a speaker, camera, or a phone. It's just basically a glorified MP3 player. Well, what about you, Kirsty? Would you buy one of these, do you think? Are you a techie girl?
No, not at all. Far too much money for something that's very small, and you could easily sit on it or drop it down the toilet or lose it. And that sort of thing doesn't leap out at me, I'm afraid.
Okay, so it's a big thumbs down then.
I mean, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful piece of hardware, but it really is not worth the hype and the money. I mean, it's incredibly overhyped. Wait a year, and there's already alternatives. Nokia N95 is a great phone. It has many more features. It's perhaps not as quite as snazzy, but it looks pretty nice. There's HTC Touch, which is another phone with a similar interface. HTC is a big phone company that makes phones that you will not have heard of because they're usually branded with something else like MDA or something like that. But there's already better phones, well, equally good phones out there. So I would be very unless you're sort of willing to let yourself be seduced by this sort of Apple snazziness, then you just wait a while and don't waste your money on this.
Now, on the material side of things, of course, people are buying lots of expensive goods. But you came across, was it another website? I think in habitat.com.
Yes. Well, there is another. Well, I mean, I've been meaning to talk about this for, you know, ever since we started, but we just never got around to it. But there's this new initiative that has started about 3 years ago and has finally come to fruition. It's called the One Laptop Per Child, OLPC, that has finally released their laptop. And their mission is to produce, when they started, was a $100 laptop, and now it turns out it's, you know, in 3 years it's going to become a $200 laptop, so that you can send it to developing countries, to children who can have a very kind of simple, low power, very durable kind of laptop that they can use in school. So that has now come out. And if you live in the U.S. or if you have access to, you know, relatives in the U.S., send them to this the website called the Laptop Giving or the XO Giving, because the laptop is now called XO, I guess presumably for hugs and kisses or something like that.
Okay.
And you can buy it for yourself, but what you're doing, you're paying $400. You're buying one for yourself and one to be sent to donate to a child somewhere in the developing world. There are a lot of questions about these sort of educational sense of, you know, whether it makes sense educationally. So there's plenty of questions to be asked and answered that way, but I think it's a good idea. It's probably done, you know, it's not quite as revolutionary as people think, but it's you could do a lot worse, and then you'll end up with this really nice looking laptop that has that would be good for your child, you know, if you have like a 10-year-old or something like that, and you don't want to buy them a proper computer, get a cheap one like that, and they can, you know, and it's durable. They can take it with them to camp, whatever. So unfortunately, it's in the U.S. only at the moment, but certainly worth keeping an eye on. And if you have $400 to spare, skip the iPhone, buy one of these things, and do some good in the world.
It's more and more giving, isn't it? It's like Christmas time when people go into somebody's stores, and it's just like present for Dad, £10. What a waste of money.
Yes.
Because it's just like socks and a pint mug filled with golf tees or something and a dodgy tie. And it's better off in some ways to buy a goat for the starving in Africa. And more people are doing that these days. And the net, from what you're saying, is kind of cottoning on to this, because I've just seen the website as well. It's a web game, provides rice for the hungry. And what it is, it's a web game. 50,000 people have been fed for one day, the UN's World Food Programme. And the game is called Free Rice. It tests the vocabulary of participants. For each click on the correct answer, the website donates money to buy, very generously, 10 grains of rice. The company's advertising on the website provide the money to the WFP to buy and distribute the rice. And it went online in October and has raised 1 billion grains of rice.
Well, that's not too bad, yeah.
So it's pretty good stuff. So maybe this kind of stuff will happen.
Well, I think what we should do is just a theme on that in about right before Christmas, because there's lots and lots of opportunities on the net for sort of charitable giving. That's, in a way, sort of taking the power of the net and doing something good with it, and in a way that perhaps was not as easy or as easy to sort of ramp up the interest as before the advent of networking.
Now, on a slightly different subject, you just bought your new computer and you've been loading up the software. Anything particularly you've discovered?
Yes, I mean, I wanted to talk about it. When people get a new computer, and what do you do with the new computer? I mean, last week I was saying that you just get rid of everything that comes on as a trial, particularly those internet security suites, because it's very often people forget it's just a trial, so they sign up for it, and then 3 months later they stop receiving updates because they never pay, and then you're not protected at all. I mean, having an out-of-date antivirus is as good as not having any antivirus at all. So don't do yourself a favor. The first thing you should do, uninstall McAfee or Symantec or whatever it comes as a trial. And sometimes it's not as easy to uninstall, so you may have to take some steps, like put in CDs or go to their website. But get rid of it, because it slows your computer down, and it does a lot of, and often prevents people to get on the internet properly and all these things. So get rid of that. Your next step should be to go to the to AVG, which is a free antivirus that also has a paid version, but the free antivirus is more than adequate for anything you need, I would say. And so go that. It's free.avg.com, I think.
I use AVG.
Website. Yes.
And previously I signed up to McAfee, and I think I used a Norton as well, which is semantics these days.
Yes, Symantec, yeah.
But AVG does it. Is this all making sense to you at all, Kirsty? Is this right over your head? Do you've got a computer? Do you put software and bits and pieces on it?
I've got an ancient laptop at home. I don't know if that's in any way protected. But the one at work, I know that there's a little box. If it goes black and grey, I have to click on it and make it all colourful again. And that's something to do with viruses.
That sounds like AVG. AVG.
Yeah.
Does that. Well, they all have that. Basically, antivirus has to update itself, get new information about new viruses. Otherwise, because new ones are appearing every second, pretty much. So you want to have your antivirus up to date, and make sure that it just kind of keeps updating itself. And it's the free one is just as good as the expensive one.
But why are viruses appearing every second? Who's doing it? I picture like 14-year-olds in the bedrooms.
A lot of them are just mutations of old viruses. Somebody just takes an old virus and sees, well, Symantec or whatever, AVG stops me, so I'm just going to change it a little bit so that it gets around AVG. So AVG looks at it. They update the definition of the virus in their system. And it's kind of a cat and mouse game. So it's not like somebody sits down every – and every second might have been an exaggeration. But,
maybe.
It goes into tens of thousands a year, I think. Definitely thousands. Thousands, but it's not that the problem. The problem is that you need to prevent the virus from getting on your system in the first place. So the next step you should do before you with your new computer is that go to the control panels, and there's a security Windows security panel or security center, and make sure your Windows updates are set to automatic, and they automatically install Windows updates. That would be different if you're a big company, but if you're just an individual, go ahead and do that. Make sure that you have firewall is on. It usually is on by default, and that and an antivirus. And now new computers will come with the Windows spyware protection. It's called I can't remember, but it's and you can also get it off Microsoft for free. So make sure that is turned on, but it will be. And then install AVG, get off Symantec, because antivirus is the only thing that does not come with Windows automatically these days. So get AVG. and you're done for security, and then just behave sensibly. And again, we'll need to talk more about how to sort of behave sensibly, because an expert has said, is antivirus is kind of your last defense. It's kind of like a seatbelt, you know. But if you're driving a car into a tree, you don't want to rely on your seatbelt to save it. The smart thing is not to drive a car into a tree.
So if you just plugged in your computer last week and put none of this antivirus or anti-spyware on, how long would it be till your computer grounds to a halt?
Well, probably quite a while. I mean, it really depends. I actually, personally, I do not run an antivirus. What I do is I have a firewall on, and there's
the Windows firewall.
The Windows firewall, that's all you need. Don't forget about these fancy other firewalls. That's basically, just get the Windows firewall on. Then what you need to do is, if you're on the internet, you're better off if you get a router, it's a little box between you and the connection rather than dialing up directly, because that automatically adds another layer of protection. It's got another firewall, sort of a hardware firewall.
So I've got like a BT hub.
Yes, that will do a nice job
sometimes.
of protecting you against, because most viruses, pretty much all the viruses, except for a very small class of them, will not enter your computer uninvited. You have to click on something, you know, like C, you know, whatever, Anna Kournikova naked. You know, you click on that, you get a virus. If you don't click on it, you don't get a virus, even though it's in your mailbox. You know, so that's kind of always requires an action. There is a small class of viruses that are kind of trolling the net, looking for computers without a firewall, and then they can infect you within minutes. However, ever since Windows started shipping since Service Pack 2, with their firewall on automatically, the danger of those viruses have decreased dramatically. Unless you click on things you shouldn't click on, which is like email attachments from suspicious characters, or even from people you know that are, you know, that invite you to see somebody naked or whatever, or see this funny guy, don't click on those attachments, and then you should be by and large safe if you go to sort of reasonably safe websites.
I got about 25 emails from Safeway in America yesterday, all sent to me. So that's known as spam, isn't it?
That's known as spam, yes.
So what is there a reason why it's called spam?
I think it's just from people like Monty Python.
Right. Okay.
Because the spam song, when you go spam, 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 spam. So I looked in the Wikipedia article, and I can't remember what it said, but I think it said something like that.
Okay. Dominic, delight as always to see you. Okay, and next week we're going to talk about particularly secrets for Google, aren't we, about how you can unlock your Google and let it do all sorts of weird and wonderful things. We've had two sessions on those. They've been very popular.
Okay,
and so next week
we can do
fun.
That.
Okay, cheers. Thanks
Bye.
Very much. Cheers. It's Dominic Lukesh.